Hi, Paul. Okay, looks like we have all of our board here and our administration, so I think we could get started, unless anybody has any reason to wait. Okay, let's call this meeting to order. Historic Places Review Board meeting Friday, September 18th, 2020 at 9 a.m. or 9:03 a.m. First on our list here is the agenda. I did note that there's no part on the agenda at the end here for adding a voting on a limited meeting for the next meeting. So if anybody would like to make a motion to add that to our agenda.
I'll be happy to make that motion. I'm on mute. Okay, I can never tell if I'm mute or not. So if you can hear me, this is Nancy Peacock, and I wanted to make a motion to add to the agenda that we have a limited meeting for the purpose of visiting the sites and the reason it would be a limited meeting is because of security, privacy, liability, and so forth. And it would be for the meeting coming up, I believe it's in March. So it'd be the limited meeting for which probably would be March 4th for the March 5th board meeting. I think I need a second.
I second it.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on the agenda? Any other motions or questions?
Yeah, I have another agenda item. I think that because we never got the July 31st meeting minutes. I don't know if we just eliminate that now from the agenda or whether we wait till we get to that item and not be able to vote on it because it didn't come in.
I emailed everyone the minutes yesterday, along with the updated nomination for Kaiser Estate.
I got it. Oh,
I didn't get that. Sorry. So I haven't had a chance to review that. Sorry.
So it's on your, it's on your guys' email.
When did that go out, Chandra?
It went out yesterday along with the updated Kaiser Estate nomination.
Well, you know what time that was?
Yeah, I didn't see that till this morning.
I sent it out at 6 o'clock yesterday.
Oh, no wonder I didn't.
Before I left the office.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, up to you, Katie. But you know, because it came out so late, I've of course not had a chance to review any of that.
Right. Yeah. Alan, are we able to defer approval of those minutes until the next meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe we can just see a show of hands of the board of how many people were actually able to review those minutes. Okay. It looks like only a couple or three people. Okay. We have only three board members that had the opportunity to review it. So somebody, if you'd like to, anybody like to make a motion to defer approval?
I'll do that again because this is Nancy Peacock again. I move that we defer the approval amendments of the July 31st, 2020 regular meeting minutes until we've all had a chance to review them.
This is Alton. I will second.
Okay, thank you.
I think we need to take a vote on both those motions. I'm not sure we did.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, Katie.
All right. Can we please take a vote on the motion to alter the agenda to add the limited meeting? All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Okay, thank you. And now for the motion to defer the approval of the July 31st meeting minutes. All in favor?
Aye, Nancy.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you. I think we did have the, so that was for the July 31st meeting minutes, but I think we did have the meeting minutes for the July 30th meeting already.
Yeah.
Okay. All All in favor of approving those meeting minutes?
I'm just going to abstain because I, oh yeah.
Okay. Anyone opposed?
No, but I'm abstaining because I wasn't there.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy. All right. Thank you. Now we can move on to the nominations.
Did you want to introduce the board members?
Oh.
Let's introduce each other.
Sure. Alan's saying something. You're on mute.
My apologies. I'm having a morning. You need to actually adopt the minute, the agenda.
Oh, okay. Thank you. If there's no other comments in the agenda, please, can we all in favor of adopting the amended agenda?
Yes.
Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Okay. The agenda has been adopted. Thank you, Alan. Okay, we can move on to the nominations. First up is the Henry Kaiser Estate.
Katie, can we make sure that we have a time limit on different nominations?
Oh, yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Can you say it again, please, Bill?
Introduce the members of the board.
We can introduce the members. Okay. I can see here on my screen, first is Bill Chapman.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Bill Chapman. I'm an architectural historian on the board.
Okay. Bill Sousa.
Good morning, everyone. Bill Sousa, a Hawaiian representative.
Okay. Paul Morgan.
Paul Morgan, architecture.
Okay. Pat. You're on mute, Pat.
Pat Griffin, historian.
Okay. Alton?
Alton Okinaka, sociologist.
And Nancy?
Nancy Peacock, architect.
Okay. And I'm Katie Stevens, also an architect. Okay. We can move on. Now we can move on to the nominations. The Henry J. and Alice Kaiser Estate. And that would be Lorraine.
Hello.
Yes, and I'd like to offer if you can keep your presentation to about 5 minutes, and then we can have ample time for questions and comments. Thank you, Lorraine.
Okay, will do. I have a PowerPoint, so I can just share my screen. That's okay.
Yes.
All righty. Okay, can everybody see the screen?
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much for having me this morning. My name is Lorraine Minato Ishii. I'm presenting the nomination for 535 Portlock Road. The board requested that we reevaluate the integrity levels of the pavilion and the dog run walls at the last board meeting. So, I will run through the presentation fairly quickly because you have seen most of this already. I think also Katie and Nancy were able to view the site this week, and Annie Chan was able to take them around for several hours, showing them both the site as well as construction documents that are pending. So, let's see. Okay. The main house parcel has been listed on the Hawaii Register in 2016. That was 525 Portlock Road. And here it is. Henry Kaiser, the American industrialist and entrepreneur, was considered the most powerful businessman in Western United States during World War II, employing nearly 100,000 people, making more than 300 different products and 180 plants. So we are nominating the parcel, both parcels, under criterion B for important person. created the Hoover Dam. He had 7 shipyards. And then he made Hawaii his home. In 1959, he created the Hilton Hawaiian Village and developed Hawaii Kai. Here is his house before construction commenced. And here it is a couple months later. This is the main house. And the architect was George Wright and Edward Bauer. And the style is modern, and the date of construction is 1959 for all resources. So we are asking for a boundary expansion right now, and that would be 535 Portlock Road. The contributing resources would be the trophy house, water feature, and dog run walls. And this is the property here. So we have, even though number 4 and number 2 are considered remnants, there's the dog run walls of number 4. Number 2 is the pavilion, or what we call the the manager's residence and trophy house. And then number 3, which are the landscape pools. And here it is. So the significance, like I said, is criterion B for Henry Kaiser. And the aspects of integrity, we believe that the integrity of location, setting, feeling, and association is high. However, for as far as materials, design, and workmanship, these are low for the trophy house and the manager's quarters and the dog run walls, as they have been compromised by different owners over the years and have had a long period of vacancy in the mid to late 1990s. However, the water feature has a high integrity. The rest, we believe, does have quite good integrity, location, setting, and feeling and association. And here is the photo of the trophy house in the shortly after construction. And here is the plan. These are 1977 drawings, and they are primarily mechanical drawings, and they were doing some work as far as interior modifications. Here is how it looks today. It does lack in integrity of design, materials, and workmanship. Although the foundation remains, much of the building has been altered, and the significant strength due to the concrete structural framework allowing it to stand the test of time. It's here. Oops, sorry. Here you can see it is actually made of concrete. Here is the water feature. And here are the dog run walls as they look today. Here's an overhead view taken recently. And so again, for significance, it's really for the significance of Henry Kaiser, and this is kind of the story of the last part of his life. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, Lorraine, this is Nancy Peacock. You said you were going to weigh in on the numbering of the pages, but there was a lack of collating of the page numbers because of for the you're expanding the site. But for my way of thinking, what I've got here, that was what got posted, it just starts on section 7-page 7, and like I don't know where the first I was having a hard time finding out where the first three pages, first six pages were, where you tie it to who the architect was and what kind of period and that sort of stuff. It didn't seem to be in there. So I think I had noted that.
It
seemed to be a little out of order there.
Boundary expansion. The nomination form numbers 1, 2, and 3. So then number 1 is name of property. Number 2 is location. Number 3 is the state federal agency certification. That's on the very first page. So I can just take this out for you here. So we have, you know, the very first page has the first 3. Then the second page of the nomination would be 4 and 5. And then the third page continues with 5. Now, what we did was, because it's a boundary expansion, we changed the number of contributing resources from 1 to 4, because we do believe, even though that pavilion is a remnant, we still considered it a contributing resource. And then number 6 would be the same, domestic. Now 7 is also just same, the modern. And then we go into, so from 7, we have description and we have the summary paragraph, and then pages, the following pages are describing the main house, which was nominated in 2016. Then after that section, after basically page 89, because from that point all the way through page 89, these pages are for the main house. And then following that, we go back to, again, section 7, which is the boundary expansion. And then that was talking about the other resources that we're adding, the 3 resources and that 535 address. So we have in the boundary expansion, we have 7, and then we have 8, section 8, and then we have section 9. So 8 is significance. We pretty much copied, you know, we just said it's the same, significance is the same because it's Henry Kaiser. And then we have additional bibliography in section 9. And then we have further maps, etc., in section 10. Then we have a bunch of additional documentation, just like the first section, which has historic photos, plans, and present day photos. So just the present day photos. So that's how we've organized the nomination.
So Lorraine, I looked up the rules for boundary amendment forms, and my understanding is that if you're amending a boundary for something that's already on the register, you're only supposed to include the portion that you're adding, and you put it on a nomination form. This is kind of how, in a way, that you did it the last time, the last meeting. So you only include the portion that you're adding, and you only talk about the resources that you're adding. You don't talk about the original property. If you are amending the original nomination, so if you were amending the nomination of the house, the original house, and you were adding new information, you would then put a new nomination form for that house, and then you would put a separate nomination, completely separate nomination form for the boundary amendment. So the boundary amendment always needs to be separate, a separate nomination form, and it should refer only to the new property.
Right. So that's originally what we did. But what we realized when we did that is that the boundary amendment form did not include sections 1 through 6. So people were thinking, oh, you didn't complete sections 1 through 6. So what we decided to do was just include everything so that everybody could see that sections 1 through 6 were completed. And if they wanted to, they could also read the original. Because you shouldn't actually create this very first sheet again, I don't think.
That's not what, because what I've seen is you do create that first new sheet. You basically use an entire form and you title it the Henry J. and Alice Kaiser Estate in parentheses boundary amendment. That would be the title of it. And then everything that you refer to in that form would only refer to the properties in the area that you're adding. Because then you can make it clear which elements are within this new portion, you know, how many elements are contributing and non-contributing. You would still have that first portion of the form, and it would become clear what is in the new portion and what was there previously, that would be separate.
I see. So what we can do then is just do that. We can keep this form because we did modify it just to include those resources here, or actually here. So we can keep these, and then we can just say here, boundary amendment, and pretty much keep it at that. I don't know. I guess we take out 525 Portlock Road.
You need to redo the first sheets so that they identify that it's a boundary extension. It identifies which, you know, how many contributing and non-contributing elements are in the boundary amendment part, you know, what they are significant for. I mean, they may have something different.
The significance would stay the same.
Right. But it needs to, the form needs to be separate and not include the house, which is already on the register. Yeah. Mm. Unless you were adding new information about the house, which I don't think you were doing, but that again would be separate. Mm-hmm. So anybody, Nancy, I'm sorry to cut in on your question. Did you have more questions?
Not really. I mean, I think that I agree. It's the sequencing of the pages, even the 1 through 6 pages, which were part of the original nomination, are not sequentially correct. Even if they were to have been co-joined, they're not labeled as 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, 6. If you look at the nomination, it's even now, I'm just saying that those pages aren't even in the right, don't have the right page numbers for the current nomination. So I'm agreeing with you, Katie.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what that means because it says 1, 2, 3, 4 in here. I mean, they're only the first four pages, basically, of the nomination.
Well, if you want to get specific, like section, if I look at the nomination, like what you call section 7, page 4, is really your page 1. In the new nomination, but it's labeled as section 7, page 4. Section 7, page 5 is actually your new page 2. Section 7, page 6 is your page 3. So,
yeah.
I think,
Lorraine, you just need to look at the page numbering there was off. It's mine starts section 7, page 7. It starts, like, I think the page numbering is off. But anyway, you can check that. Are there other questions for comments for Lorraine?
Katie, I have a quick question. Yeah. I wasn't on the board during the time of the first nomination, and I probably should have done some more research. But was the criterion B on the first one for the significance, the association with Henry Kaiser? Would it be the same for this? I mean, this is what you've stated for this amendment. Is it the same?
Yeah. It is the same.
because I, you know, as you probably, Alan, I look defer to you on this, but my understanding is that Criterion B does have kind of the highest expectations for integrity in the sense of being associated with the time period in which the person was there, higher even than, say, folding somebody into as a significant person into Criterion A.
Well, I'm not sure it has, you may be correct there. Of course, the matter of integrity is always a judgment call by the board and then ultimately by the keeper.
But I always used to teach my students, and I always learned that Criterion B just has this higher set of standards so that you should be able to walk into the space and see, experience what the person that is associated with the space experience. Because if there have been significant changes that during that time, it can have that associative significance, but they often recommend to toss it into Criterion A because it's more forgiving and it's broader in its expectations. It can still cite the importance of people in A, but not so specific.
I mean, I think with respect to the house itself, I think it has an extraordinarily high level of integrity. Whether, obviously, the real question, I think, in this instance is what the board feels about the integrity of these, four features, as far as being do they contribute or not?
Well, at the last meeting, one of the things I said, I think, to Lorraine was that if this is an amendment to the existing, it's a little easier to justify these pieces because they become part of a bigger whole. And so that's basically the judgment. How does it relate to the bigger piece? And if these are minor elements of a large nomination, they, in a way, they probably don't rise to the same level of significance. If they did, they were going in on their own.
This is Nancy Peacock weighing in too. Back to the page that's the number of resources within the property, that page, which in my I believe it's section 1-6, page 3, at least that's the set I have here. Could you go over what's the contributing and what's the non-contributing structures there, Lorraine? Because you've got two contributing buildings, two contributing sites, and one non-contributing building. Could you just review what those are?
The non-contributing is the new garage that's up against the side of Portlock Road. I think it's a six-car garage.
That would be the one that's affiliated with the main residence.
Right. Because I was adding resources to the main house nomination.
So what are the two sites then?
That would be the water feature and the dog run wall.
Okay. So the two contributing buildings is the main residence and the trophy house, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Okay.
So I think we talked a little bit last time about the pavilion structure and how the exterior and interior walls and the pitched roof were removed in the 1970s, and how those changes are not yet 50 years old, maybe 5 or however many years from now. The pavilion will have been in that format for 50 years, but right now it's not yet 50 years old. And at least I personally felt like a lot of the integrity of that structure had been removed. And so I wasn't convinced whether it was contributing or not. I mean, I still question that. But it kind of, for me, leads into another discussion that Nancy and I were able to go look at the site. The architects in charge of the project were great, showed us around the property. We really appreciated that. It really made a big difference for us to see that entire property. And I hope that the board does get a chance to do that, to go and see the property. And they also were very forthright in discussing future plans for the property and what they would like to do, which was really wonderful. And I think that's helpful too. When we talked in a couple meetings ago about Cocoa Palms, and what is still left there, and what the architects were very upfront about what they wanted to do to the property. And that was helpful in us thinking about whether this property was going to retain integrity with these changes or not. It's sometimes difficult to put a property on the register when you know something's going to happen there, but you don't know what that is. So there have been times where we see, I think even in our last meeting, there was a house that was having a big addition put on the back, but they were just starting to do it. And we didn't know what that was going to look like. We didn't know the potential impact on that property. So we asked that to be deferred until we could see that. So I still feel a little bit the same in this case, that it would be good for everybody to know what they're planning to do. And they're very interested in preserving much of the site and still make it useful for them in the future. So I think that would be a great thing for everyone on the board to see, to have the opportunity to look at the site. But for example, they share what they would like to do with the pavilion to make it useful for them in the future. And so if we know what the pavilion looked like before, we know what it looks like now, and we have an idea of what it's going to look like in the future, we can better understand where that would still be a contributing part of this resource. So I hope that going forward, everybody get a chance to see that and understand. It was very impressive to see the other parts of the property, to see the boathouse building and everything, and to see the entirety of what is there is pretty amazing. But helpful too to understand, how it's going to be used in the future.
Katie, I have another quick question. It may be kind of manini, and maybe it's something I said last time that led to this, but out of curiosity, the water feature, Alan, I'm going to ask your opinion on this too. Like if it's a site, normally one thinks it's somehow been compromised from its original. Is not the water feature fully intact, and wouldn't it then be a structure?
I would agree with that.
The dog run, I would call a site because it's just you can only kind of visualize it through remnant bits and pieces, but it seems that the water feature is complete and whole.
Yes, Bill Souza, I agree with Bill. I was at the site. I visited in the house and that property as well. That part is very creative, and I really think that the integrity factor is really there in that area.
And I thought it was interesting to note too that the pool is fills up as the tide, the water level increases with the tide, and there are openings in the side that allow water to come in and out and fish to come in and out. And I think that's an important thing to note too about that feature. Okay, does anybody have any further questions about the property for Lorraine for the nomination? Okay, would anybody like to make a motion of any kind?
Yeah, this is Nancy Peacock. I'd like to make a motion to defer this nomination until these comments and revisions have been corrected. So that, I think that's my nomination. I need a second just for deferral.
Anybody like to second?
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you, Bill. All in favor of deferring this? Raise your hand, say aye.
Aye.
Nancy?
Aye. Yes.
Anyone opposed? Bill, which were you raising your hand for? Aye or no? Bill Chapman. Aye. Okay.
Aye.
Okay, Taylor. Okay. Thank you. And this nomination will be deferred.
And Katie, can I make a comment? I don't think we're being mean about this. I just think that we want to get it right.
So I completely agree. This is obviously a very wonderful, a very significant property. And I agree. I think we want to get this right and make sure all the right things are included. And I think it's wonderful. And I think it would be great too if they actually could nominate the whole property. I mean, I think that that's their intent to do it over time, but the sooner or the larger pieces that we can get put together, the sooner is great.
This is Nancy Peacock weighing in. I just wanted to give a shout out to the owner of the property, Miss Annie Chan, and her two helpers that guided us through the property, and of course, the adorable dogs and the cat and everybody. Thank you so much for your hospitality when you were so welcoming to myself and Katie. And I think for the rest of the board, I recommend that you all try to get out there and see this beautiful site. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Okay, and Tanya asked me to please confirm we had 7 yes and no opposed for the deferral. And Tanya, I'll try to continue to do that. Okay, our next nomination is the house for Dr. and Mrs. Katsumi Miyano.
Aloha.
Good morning.
Me?
Yes, good morning.
I was very grateful for one thing. I just wanted to say a thank you to my mom and dad for even having the foresight to even hire an architect like Stephen Oyakawa, who had the very close ties and design styles to Frank Lloyd Wright back in the 60s was when they hired him. And hopefully the board will agree that this home should be included in the State Historic Preservation Register. And a nice surprise was that in 2009, Mom and I were honored to be able to even meet with the grandson of Frank Lloyd Wright, Eric Lloyd Wright, who is also an architect, after he gave a lecture at the Lillestrand House. And anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting to note that the son of Stephen Oyakawa is also a practicing architect, and he's living in Denver, Colorado, I believe, practicing architecture. But anyway, I was just wondering, the current uploads on the nomination shows the revisions that were suggested by the board, and it also has the interior photos that weren't visible before.
And can I interrupt for just a second? You're showing up as Reiki Young.
I'm on a computer.
Can you introduce yourself, because I can't see a face, but maybe you want to just say who you are, because I think you
named
Gab Miano.
This is Gab Miano Young.
Okay, thanks.
I'm the current owner of the house for Dr. and Mrs. Katsumi Miano. And getting back to what I was mentioning, I hope that the previously uploaded photos are still part of the nomination. And when I originally dropped off the hard copy forms in Kapolei many, many months ago, I don't know if it was February or March, but all the photos and maps and the newspaper article, they were all like labeled in pencil. I was looking at the guidelines, that 80 something page guideline from the National Park guideline book, and it mentioned to label photos in pencil. But when I emailed them, I just put it in the subject line or in the text of the emails with the digitized photos. So anyway, I'm hoping everything is still intact and still there somewhere. Is there any questions you have for me, or did you want me to show the slideshow briefly? Because I believe Nancy Peacock wasn't able to be at the last meeting.
if there's time, I'd love to see it. But again, I've been to the site, so I'm very familiar with the parcel. Katie and I did.
Yeah. Would you like to see the old photos?
Sure.
If we can run through that really quickly, that would be fine. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe I'll start from these. Let's see, how do I do this? Desktop. How do I show this? Do you even see my screen at all, or does it show all kinds of things on there?
Actually, we don't see a shared screen at all. We're still seeing ourselves.
Okay, sorry. I'm pressing the share screen button, the green one.
Chandra, do you have to allow her to share or anything?
Okay, I think, did that work?
It's, the share is on.
Is it on?
Yeah, but we're not seeing it. She just means you should be able to share, I think.
Share, open system preferences, sorry. Can I email Nancy and whoever else didn't see this?
Oh, it's okay, sure. Don't worry about it. I mean, if technology is, you know, way
too. Yeah, it's okay.
I think valuable resources here, so you could, yeah. Just
yeah, we were able to see the images last time, and I know Nancy was able to check it out, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so do any of the board members have any questions?
Madam Chair, I have a comment, if I may. A few years ago, I wrote a book about Central Lihue and its development, and Stephen Oyakawa designed the library in right. Lihue, which is quite an interesting building. He was Ossipoff's vice president with the Hawaii chapter of the AIA back when Waikiki started developing so quickly, and they declared a war on ugliness. He's really an interesting character who died quite young, but he also put forward a great proposal for Frank Lloyd Wright to design our Capitol building that nobody else could do what he could do, and he spoke against his spoke against modesty, and he's saying that that it was really a disservice to be modest when you're the greatest. speaking of Frank Lloyd Wright, in the Lihue Library, he had been real active on the nightly at Taliesin and so forth. He was a Taliesin fellow, and there was they would put on plays and all kinds of events there. And in the Lihue Library, it was never put in, but he actually designed a fireplace for the central meeting room in the Lihue Library. I'm sure it was quite reminiscent of his 14 years as a Taliesin fellow. So I hadn't seen one of his residences, so it's been a real treat to review this nomination over the last couple of meetings, and I hope you'll invite me to see it at some point in the future in person. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. He also designed the Liliha Library.
Yes.
And they're going to be reopening soon. It looks like they're pretty close to the finish of their renovations.
That's such a wonderful little structure, the Liliha Library. Mm-hmm. Any more comments or questions?
Yeah, this is Nancy Peacock, and I did go to the site a couple days ago with Katie, and we were able to take a quick peek inside, and it's there is an enormous amount of integrity to the site and to the house, and it's all there. I mean, yeah, even the, I don't know, maybe the appliances. I mean, it's really, it's like walking back in time in a way to experience that. The only thing I have in terms of, I was really glad I got to see the interior, because
it's the photos are not tied. There's no tie-in on the page that it's a photo. It doesn't tie to the log, which I think is required to be done. At least in the set I have here, there's no tie-in. So, you know, if you're trying to figure out, you know, northwest, southeast corner or whatever, looking to the kitchen or whatever, that they don't tie together. You have to sort of use your imagination. There's not even a page number or anything. So I think that's just a technical
problem. Technical thing. Yeah, when I submitted the hard copy forms, they were all labeled to which number of the log, as well as when I emailed them separately, they had the number, the photo number of the log, you know. And so the information is out there. It just has to be, I don't know, somehow. Maybe is there possible to put like pages in between the photos just with the copy and paste from the email subject line showing what the owner?
Yeah, I mean, this is something I was struggling with too, because you have three photo logs at the end, and you know, one says, because I think they're different photographers and different times things were taken, but you have, you know, the first list has photos 1 through 9, the second has photos 1 through 5, the third has photos 1 through 7. And so they refer to 22 photos, but when I look at how many photos actually were included, there was only 8, and they're just sort of loose, you know, that, so there's nothing identifying which photo they are or what they're of. And so some people will actually take those continuation forms and insert the photo onto the form and then put some sort of title onto it. You know, this is interior view, you know, taken this date by this person. So I think trying to fix that would be really helpful so that people could see these photos and then understand what they're looking at. They do want you to include a sketch map too, which is basically, you could take an aerial view like from Google Maps and then key in with little arrows and numbers what direction each photo is being taken from. That's also helpful too. And it looked like when I looked at the form that was uploaded last night by Chandra, it looked like it lost the maps that had been previously included. So I think
all the other photos. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like we're still kind of struggling to get the photos and images like inserted in here correctly.
Since the photos and the information regarding each photo, like I was told that since the photo logs each have their own, you know, like 1 of 8, 7 of 8, or you know, 1 of 9, or 1 of 5, you would know which log it was. That was what I was told. And then I also did include the photo maps of, you know, where each photo was taken around the property. That was on the previous meeting. Those were
uploaded. Okay. Well, so whatever was uploaded last night had some photos. It only had 8 photos, and then it's not clear which photo log, because you have all the photo logs in a row, and then you have all the photos afterwards. And so it's not clear which photo log each photo is for, especially when there's less photos than is listed in the photo log. So I think we just, maybe somebody can help you to sort of rectify that and make that a little bit more clear. I mean, I think it's an amazing property, and both Nancy and I had been a little concerned that because there was an addition that was done, and the nomination form didn't really describe what the addition was, and there was no photos of it. So that's always sort of concerning when you're trying to think about integrity. But when we were able to go walk around the outside, we could see that it's basically just a screen enclosure. So it really does not have, you know, much of a negative impact on that building. But, you know, we didn't know that. We didn't know what the addition was. And so, you know, it might be helpful too if there's any way to include a picture of that addition, or maybe just a little bit more description. Yeah.
And another thing is, Babs, there's that somehow that other photo snuck in the
the documents, which is your neighbor. Could you take that out? It's very confusing. There's like your next door neighbor's house is shown in the middle of the submittal, but it's not your house. It's the one next door on the left.
Oh, I think what happened was because Wally Cunningham had taken that photo because that house was also designed by Oyakawa. That's the reason why it's in there and it's mentioned in the nomination that, you know, it's just interesting that two homes side by side were designed by the same architect that our house was.
I think it would be, you know, great to leave that in there, but then it just needs to be clearly identified that this is the adjacent house. You know, so when you get to that photo, that there's somehow in the photo log or, you know, some sort of reference to the fact that this is a different property by the same architect.
Yes, I know. And I realized that when I emailed all the separate photos with the titles of what they were describing briefly what were, maybe it got, you know, I don't know. The information is out there. I just didn't know how it would be uploaded, you know.
Yeah. So I think this is a wonderful property with a lot of integrity, but I think maybe you could get some help with someone to just sort of clean up that part of it so it's a little more clear for people.
Okay. Do you, on the previous meeting, part of the agenda mentioned that if like minor revisions are done, that they otherwise could pre-approve a nomination if, you know, the edits or minor revisions are taken care of satisfactorily. But that, just the identifying my photos be helpful in that regard.
And Babs, I think you also need to identify the floor plans and exterior elevations and the interior.
Yes.
All of those is not just the photos.
Correct.
I mean, everything that I submitted. They're so tiny, I need a magnifying glass. If you could blow it up to fit the 8.5 by 11, it'd be a lot easier, you know, to format those drawings so they're a little bit bigger because they're microscopic.
Yeah. Right. As the hard copy that's at Kapolei has everything labeled and everything. It's just that when I emailed things separately, the labeling got, you know, edited off. So is it possible for, you know, if we can work out the minor labeling of the maps and the newspaper article and the, you know, all the photos to tie them to the different logs.
Bob, Babs, would it be, this is Nancy Peacock, would it be possible to just defer this nomination? I mean, I would recommend, and I'm happy to make a motion to defer it, give you the time to make all those revisions and then consider it at whatever is appropriate next time to be sure that those things are done.
Actually, you know, everything's like right on my phone. I mean, I could like put in those revisions very easily within the week. Because
if I can jump in, our concern's been just to make sure we know they were done, I guess, if we have some assurance from the staff that they would be able to make sure these are done.
That's correct, and we've had that issue before where we tried to decide whether we would prefer to defer something because we just want to make sure that the changes happen, or if the changes are minor enough, because we actually have no way of really confirming that things were changed. I mean, once it's put onto the register, it's on the register, and you know, there's no sort of intermediate step. So I think the board just has to decide how they feel if it's important enough to defer this and make sure all the labeling is done correctly.
Katie, I just had one quick comment. Can you hear me, Katie?
Yeah, go ahead, Laura.
The children, Babs Miano Young and Leland Miano, are both excellent Hawaii artists. And that should just sort of be featured in the idea of all the notables that came to the house. They were there growing up, and I saw some of the glass work there. I believe that's probably yours, Babs.
Yes.
Thanks.
Hi, Laura. Nice Hi. To see you.
Okay. Is there any other questions or comments before I ask for a motion?
So can I just have one more question, though?
Yes,
so if I'm able to submit the labeled photos and maps and everything satisfactorily, like within, you know, the week, is there a way that you could, you know, like say if it's satisfactory to the board, then you don't need to defer, because I've already been deferred once already. And hopefully, you know, this is a minor revision that I can easily do from my phone.
Right. And, you know, and I can't speak for everybody, but, you know, I believe that you would do this. But there is no, we can't do it conditionally. We either have to put it on and hope that you make the changes, or we have to defer it, you know, to sort of ensure that those things happen. That's the only way we can do it. So I think the board just needs to determine whether they would like to defer to, you know, confirm those revisions are made, or whether they're okay to move forward.
And this is Nancy Peacock speaking. Yeah, the house has sat there since 1962, so it seems like a couple more months isn't going to set us back. If we just wait till the next board meeting to see those revisions have been made, and we can all get copies of the revisions and see them with our own eyes. So I was going to support deferring the nomination, and I'm happy to make the motion, or if somebody else wants to make it, that's fine. But that would be my preference.
Okay. Are there any other questions or comments from any of the board members before we have a motion? Okay, then would somebody like to make a motion?
I'll make the motion. This is Nancy Peacock. I move that we defer this nomination until those minor revisions are all those ducks are lined up, and the motion is, I mean, the those minor revisions have all been made, and we can all see copies of those.
Thank you, Nancy. Would anybody care to second?
I second that. Bill Souza.
Bill Souza seconds. Okay, any other further discussion? Okay, thank you. This has been, this nomination has been deferred.
Oh, you have to vote, Katie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
In there.
I forget. Okay. Let's please take a vote on Nancy's motion to defer. All in favor, please raise your hand or say aye.
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 It looks like we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 ayes. And any opposed? Okay.
One last comment, just, you know, before the next, when it's being reconsidered, if more people can go see the property, I think it would be worthwhile if anybody else can go visit it, because it's really, the site visit is really speaks a lot to the integrity of the property. So it's just a not necessary, but something you could do between now and then, other board members. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Also, Babs, Angie Westfall says she has offered to help you put those photos and stuff together, if that would be helpful to you.
Angie wants to help?
Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing? Thank you, Angie. Thank you so much.
She's a pro at it, so, yeah.
All right. Thank you. So can I get her email, or how do I contact her?
You're on mute, Angie.
Chandra, can you do that? Can you put us together?
Yes, I'll email you her information.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Be safe.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you. Does anybody would like a quick break?
Yes, please.
Okay. 10 minutes, Bill?
5 will do.
Okay.
Bathroom break.
Okay. 5-minute break. We'll be back at 10:08.
I'll see you. Do you want to take a break too, or you're good? Okay, I got you.
Chandra, can you enlarge it?
That's the biggest goal, Laura.
What? Why? That's awfully small. Mine, you sure it can't go larger? There's fit to window you have now. You can go original size 100% or something.
You can change the size on your screen. On my screen, that's the biggest. I have it at 100%.
What about the rest of the people?
They can adjust it on their screen.
On the top.
Adjust it. Okay. Whoops.
To the right of the green, there says view options.
Yeah, that's where I was. Yeah.
So but everybody has that option.
Okay, that's good to know. It's somehow slipped to the bottom of my screen. Is it in the center for yours?
It's really small on my screen too, and it says it's at 100%. Lorraine's wasn't like that.
I don't know why that. Well, that's because she was handling it, and mine is done through Chandra's expertise. Try 150.
Oof.
Now it's gone. That looks good. Is there a way to scoot it over a little bit to the center?
Ooh,
there it is. Thank you.
Is that better, Laura?
It's can you go one percentage down? It's good, but it's falling off the sides of the screen.
Okay, we got 10:09, so I'm just going to try to confirm that the board is back here. I see Bill Sousa, I see Paul Morgan, I see Bill Chapman, I see Pat Griffin. Alton and Nancy, are you back?
Okay, we'll just leave it on this one, this size, Laura.
Okay, that's good.
I'm
here. Nancy's here. I just went on mute. I'm here.
Thanks, Chandra.
Okay, and Alton, you're back? Okay, I saw you. Okay, looks like we are all back and we can resume. So Laura Ruby talking about the Yamato store and garage.
Okay, thank you all board members and visitors and Ross Stevenson, our leader in the project for the Historic Honeycutt Town Project is also here and he may come in at any particular time. Let me start by saying that we have 13 properties on the National Register of Historic Places. And soon to be more. And we have 3 properties on the state register. We're waiting for Tanya to give us a definitive voice on where the 3 outstanding ones are that are going to the national for review and placing on the national register. So just to give you an idea, we are covering the town quite well. And then this is one of the places, the Yamato Store and Garage, which is considered uptown. Now that's in a mile long stretch, is a stretch. And it's a little bit, it's uphill, so it is uptown. Just to give you a sense of where the property is, those of you that came out to visit in the times past, the street appears to be level and that all the buildings on the Makai or the Mauka side are, you know, in fact, street level, but actually the slope of the land goes off very steeply from, this is around 1,000 feet high, and it just slopes down completely all the way down to where it hits the Pali on the, at the ocean side. So that's just to give you a little bit of the preview. This building is 101 years old. It's a whole building intact, even though it has two different functions. One is the retail function and the other is the garage function. So if you can imagine 1919, this was a very large building in the town and it was just the coming of the automobiles also. So you have lots of considerations for why this was a good move on the Yamato family. Okay, next. Chandra, oh, next. Okay, thanks. This is just to give you a location. That's the Hamakua coast, or the rectangle. And this is the Ahupua'a, the Papa'anui Ahupua'a. The Ahupua'as are only about 1,000 feet wide. They're very narrow in this section of Hamakua. Okay, next. And it's a location of the store and garage, basically. There's a central intersection, you might say, which is a little more to the left, which is the downtown section. Next. And this is the town as we have done the map for the historical buildings. And this is available to everybody who comes through the town or lives in the town. So next. And this, the TMK. which shows the properties. You might note that the way the properties were laid out in the Spencer tract was, everybody is sort of a parallelogram, and that's probably because they were orienting it to the north arrow. Next. And Sanborn map showing the property in place. This is before a lot of the streets were fully established. Next. And this is a Google aerial view, just to show you. The X is the no longer extant, what were called apartments, but it might have been a kitchen, whatever, but it has been since torn down. Next. Okay, and whoops, can we slide it a little bit over? Because I'm going to read it because I think it's helpful for you to see the written information that is required of the board to make good decisions. We'll wait a second for Chandra, if she can just slide it a little bit to the other side. Chandra, can you?
On my screen, it's showing that the whole...
On my screen too, Laura.
The left, have the left side? Let me see if I can make mine smaller again so I can read back again. Yeah. Okay, I can read it. That's okay. Okay. The Amato Store and Garage Building, as I said before, 101 years old. The slope of the parcel, like others on the Mackay side of Mamani Street, that's the main street going through the town, minimize any basement construction. Mackay buildings often have a second story for residential living, as does this building. The commercial portion of the commercial residential structure rests on a concrete foundation. All walls are of single wall construction. The roof is Totan, although many different iterations of the roof are there. The building retains its massing, scale, and such character-defining elements as the front elevations, windows, doors, shed roof, awning, and false front with its bracketed cornice. The second floor residential apartments are accessed from a street entrance. The building remains in good condition and retains its integrity of location, design, materials, setting, craftsmanship, feeling, and association. Okay, next. The Yamato property is eligible for the Hawaii and National Registers of Historic Places at the local level under Criterion A and Criterion C due to the continuous significance in small town commerce and its period architecture. Under Criterion A, history and events, the Yamato property is significant at the local level under Criterion A as the structures typify the hard work of immigrants to improve their economic status. This is a very brave move to build such a large structure at such an early time in the 20th century. Under Criterion C architecture, the Yamato property is significant at the local level. Under Criterion C, as a good example of plantation era architecture, a wood commercial and residential building constructed in Hawaii during the opening decades of the 20th century. The Yamato property retains its integrity and so is an excellent example of a structure erected purely for business purposes with residences above. And then the Yamato property retains its historical integrity in terms of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. Thank you. Okay, Chandra, next. Thank you. Okay, and this is from the field book image, and then below are the updated floor plans, which are in section 9, which designate where the photos have been taken. So you can see on the left, the main floor of the retail section has been broken up quite a bit for adaptive reuse and to make things commercially more viable. And then the upstairs shows you the second floor residence, of which have been altered a little bit. We'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, next. And this is one of the the earliest known property. We think that Mr. Yamato actually probably leased the land and built on it in 1919, but he didn't actually purchase it until 1923. So you can see that it's a very some sidewalk and just a little bit of sort of gravelly surface for going into the garage area. The pedestrian awning was lifted up a bit. You can see in the contemporary photos. And that was probably because the vehicles got bigger. And so they needed some easier entrance. Next. And here's another view. It had one of the large signage on the building also. It did say Yamato's department store. Later on, it says Yamato's garage on the garage area. The small warehouse extension was added early on the YPO side of the building to provide better access for commercial deliveries. That's the far, far left. You can see a car just poking its head out there. That was added on sometime after this 1927 approximately photo. Okay, next. And this panorama photograph is taken in 1929. It's a detail of the long panorama of Kojiro Yamato's funeral, participants standing in front of the Yamato building. And the right is 1947, young firebug Matsuda, he's still famous in the town, started a fire in the next door laundry and electronic businesses building. The building was a total loss and the inventory of the Yamato warehouse suffered smoke damage and was replaced. And it might've been at that time that some of the configuration for bringing in goods was also changed to the Makai side of the property. Next. And this was the property, and I'm just showing the census in 1920, quite a large family, and also some of the directories that are there throughout in the business directories and also in the yearbook for the Honoka High School. Honoka High School actually was founded in 1939, but the lower schools were there before. Next. And then this is the funeral detail. And just in case you're, this is just to make you more familiar with the tradition in Japanese funerals. The people closest to the casket are the priest, usually, and the family, immediate family members. The central portion has an ihai, which is the marking the, in Buddhist terms, the wooden post that has the Japanese calligraphy with the Mr. Yamato's name in front. Okay, next. This is a group of extant images throughout the overall one showing the retail and the garage. And then to the right of that is the entrance, which remains intact, exactly the same. And then behind is the lower portion is the exteriors taken. The one on the left is taken through a screen because it was too precipitous to get a clear view of it. But that's the light testing booth. And the middle section is the Hilo side. Notice it's all Totan. The revetment wall went in, whether it was the Ujiki's next door or whether it was the Yamato's, it's not known. Who put in the revetment wall. And then the other is the access area for bulk goods coming in from what you see in the distance is Mamani Street. And they would have had a hand truck and wheeled it into the double doors that are slightly there on the left. Okay, next.
Laura, if I can interject with these photographs.
Sure.
You notice the colors of the Totan are different. It's because the building was expanded over time in the Makai side. For example, on the bottom left, they were putting lamps on cars after a while, so they needed a booth to test that, which is what it says just underneath the Yamato building exteriors. That's the light testing booth. You can see also some newer Totan on the light testing booth in the center bottom photograph, too. The building was added on, if you look at the top left photograph, one-story addition on the left was the earliest addition besides the original two-story housing area and the garage on the right. Then there were other additions too in the back. And the period piece is one of the things that's most interesting about this building, as I mentioned yesterday, is the garage, because this is before they had traffic islands and all like that. One time they would have had the fuel pump right up on the curb. But you can see how from the door, the large doors there, that they would open that up for work on cars. And they've been very smart. Instead of having to open up a huge door or two sets of big doors. What they did was they cut the front paneling unevenly on the door so that a single pedestrian could open up that weighty door without having to open the whole structure. So these are kind of things that you just wouldn't think about in the modern gas station design, but this is what they would have had at that time. Thank you.
Okay, next. Whoops. This is just to show the original wavy glass and the original door. You notice the lock plate. Of course, they have a security lock also put in there now. But just to show you both, these are original features for the building. Okay, next. And then this is the only interior panorama photo we have of the interior. And it was either when it was opened in 1919 or in 1923 when it was officially purchased by the Yamato family. And then just to note, in case you hadn't seen the conventions, the flower bouquets are from well-wishers, and they're located in the mezzanine, was ever important for, again, more storage of goods. Living, you know, people in the rural areas had to, and that were shop owners, had to bring in loads of supplies, so there were always, they would always had something available in case a ship didn't make it in the stormy weather or something like that. And the lower right is one of the retail stores in 2019. Next. Oops, other, okay. And then here is the garage, just as Ross was talking about the two doors. And then below is the Kojiro Yamato standing in front of both his gas pump and his oil pump. And these were typical in the early days. Of course, they were taken out because they became a fire hazard for most of the buildings. Although there were others in the nomination papers, you can see there were others that were there into the 60s and possibly into the 70s before they were taken out, more modern type pumps. I don't think they were active pumps, but they were there nevertheless. And then you can look in the garage before it was repurposed for the commercial enterprise that you see below on the lower right. And you can see that the upper one is completely Totan, and you, in the back you see an open entrance. That was the light testing booth where cars drove in and then got their lights tested. It was so the lights would shine on the pavement, not in somebody's eyes, basically. Okay, next. Okay, this is the second floor. This is just an example of the what is today the living room on the left, bedroom central, and then a detail of the lock, the knob and lock, and all of the doors. We might add that the building, when it was the families, it was a huge open living area with four bedrooms off to either side. But when they realized the family did move out of the residence and they needed income, they split the large living room and in half, and they also made another entrance to get to the residence upstairs. Okay, next. Oops, is this the next one? Okay. Yeah, the Yamato property meets the registration requirements set forth in the multiple property submission, historical and architectural resources of Honoka Town, Papa Anui Ahupua'a, Hamakua District, Hawaii Island, Honoka MPS for the property type plantation vernacular commercial and plantation vernacular residence. Ross, did you want to add some things? We'll go on.
I just think that the owner has been making real efforts to not only maintain this building, but to repurpose it with the subdivision from the original big department store on the center left. He's also worked with us to do a number of investments on the property. For example, we spent $10,000 putting a new roof system up there to maintain the integrity of the building. And they're planning on painting it in the next few months. We're hoping to put the original painted Yamato's sign up there many of the other signs for the buildings on the parapets in town were done with tacked on materials, but Yamato is one of the few that actually painted it on. And so we want to go ahead and maintain that thing, because what it was is when you were living in this town, you didn't have an address. You would say you're going over to Yamato's, or you're going over to the hotel or something along that line. That's how people identified a business or a site where you were living. So we want to maintain that kind of character to the building too. Thank you.
Next. Chandra, next. Well, maybe we can, I think we could go through this very quickly. It's just the purveyor of general merchandise goods and automotive service station and repair shop. I think at any one time, three of the brothers were in the automotive division. And since the father passed on early on, one of the daughters took over until 1949, but also the rest of the family members were running the store up until, I'm not sure exactly when they closed, was in the 60s at the latest. And then it was serving as an incubator of entrepreneurial dreams. They had originally had some property in Ahualoa, which is a homestead Mauka, but then they sold that, and they made their full-time residence here in Honokaa. And significance, as I mentioned before, about at the local level of under Section C, single wall construction, commercial building, the windows and other things were all sort of with a couple of 2x4s on either side where they were lifted into place. And that's typical of plantation carpenter construction. And it retains its historical integrity. Okay, last slide. Okay, that's just the final one. Ross, did you want to say anything else?
As a quick update for the board on what's happening in Honokaa with the Honokaa project, is we now have 11 historic on-site building markers made out of bronze on the buildings, all the buildings that are, or most of the buildings that are on the Federal Register, the National Register now. We're in the process of installing three more, and we also are in the process of installing national park-like angled panels that, like you might see at Waipio Overlook, talking about what makes Honokaa special, which will be put in front of the credit union building in the center of town. We've also trying to deal with the cultural tourism that would be limited in scope. We've also changed some of the, working with the county, to change some of the parking layouts in front of the theater, which allows small tour buses to stop. We're trying to encourage people who are going out to Waipio Valley to also stop in town and learn about the town of Honokaa. That's all.
Thanks. Okay, Katie?
Great, thank you very much, Laura and Ross. So any questions from the board?
Ross and Laura, Madam Chair, with the pandemic, are these historic properties, is there enough traffic going through? What's happening there?
Well, I'm sure it's the same on Kauai. The traffic is not enough to sustain some of the businesses. We have lost some of the businesses. Everybody, though, when you have small-scale businesses, people are going to try wait it out, because that's their big lifetime investment. People have been helping each other out. And we've also been providing certain kinds of funds to maintain the buildings, like, for example, the Yamato building needed a new roof. We've done that on, we painted buildings and stuff like that. So we can just basically try and take advantage of the time to do structural work that needs to be done. And all we can do is wait.
Okay. Any other questions for Laura or Ross? Anybody like to make a motion?
I'd like to move that the Kajuro Yamada store and garage be listed on the State Register of Historic Places and recommended for listing in the National Register of Historic Places, and that under criteria A and C for community history and architecture.
I'll second that. I'll
second.
Looks like Bill Chapman made a motion and Pat was the first to second. Okay. Any other discussion or questions? Okay, then can please take a vote. All in favor of placing the Yamato Star and Garage onto the State Register, recommending it to National? Raise your hand, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Nancy, like yes.
Okay, looks like we have 7 in favor. That would probably leave no opposed, but if anybody's opposed. Okay, great. Thank you.
I want to commend Ross and Laura very much for the work in Hanaka'a. I mean, it's a great remaining gem in Hawaii, and I think they've just done an outstanding job. So thank you.
Thank you. Totally agree.
I too would like compliments to that, and I agree with Bill. We've been there several times, and they're doing a wonderful job. I wish more people in the Big Island and throughout our state would do the same thing to preserve what's left of that kind of life.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, our next nomination is the residents at Manini Way. Don?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it has a different name now. Frank James Investment Property.
Correct. Between the time it started and ended, I was able to find that. Okay, I'll put us on to... Okay, so this is the Frank James Investment Property, and the second name for the property nomination is the William E. I. Stearns Residence. It's at 3738B Manini Way. It was built in 1928 by Frank James, along with two other houses on the lane. The architect is not known, as the newspaper didn't mention the architect's name. It's being nominated for the Hawaii National Register, and the significance is at the local level under criterion C is a good example of a Hawaiian style house built in the 1920s in Hawaii. This is a picture of the house. As you can see, it's typical Hawaiian style, has the double pitch hip roof, lava rock foundation, numerous windows for cross ventilation. Here's a closer picture of the double pitch roof, typical overhanging eaves, exposed rafter tails, single wall house with a double board, and has double lap rustic bevel siding on the outside. It's an H-shaped house with the living room in the middle, kitchen and dining room wing on one side, and bedroom wing on the other side. Very typical floor plan for the period. Here you can see the inside, looking towards the dining room. You have double doors also, which help for ventilation. And then across right away is a bank of three double hung sash windows, which again allows the breeze to go through. The house has original Kanek ceilings, original fir floors, original Kanek walls, the typical panels, wainscot. You see this, it's carried into the dining room. The dining room has double hung windows on two, actually on three sides. There's another window on this wall as well. Has corner cupboards built in. The kitchen also was remodeled in the 50s. Has board and batten walls, double hung window, board and batten ceiling too. The door in the back of the kitchen goes out to the laundry room, which is enclosed with a small shed roof, and on top it's open with just a lattice to provide some screening. On the other side, you have a doorway that leads into the front to back running hallway, bedrooms at either end of the hall, bathroom in the middle. The bathroom remains pretty well intact as well. It has its board and batten ceiling and walls, and it has a linoleum wainscot, which follows this brick pattern. So the house is very, very much intact. It has all its original doors. Well, the only window that's not original is the jalousy in the bathroom. That's on the side of the house. You can't see it from the front. And as you see, original doorknobs throughout and single panel doors throughout. There's also a cottage to the side on the other side of the house. This is a contributing feature. It does have a new deck on, but I don't think it detracts. You can very well see the original cottage, which the tax records say was built in 1939. It follows the same design as the house with the vertical slat apron and the double lap rustic beveled siding. The door to that opens up into the kitchen area, which is still intact as well. It has a metal deco cabinets up above with their glass knobs still here, double hung window. And then the living room section of the house as well, which has double doors, which I don't think are original, but follow the front doors of the main house, which lead out to the deck. So that's it. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. The house was built in by Frank James in 1928. James was a real estate developer. He came to Hawaii in 1904 when he was with his parents, I assume. He was 16 years old at the time, finished his education. He does not say where in the newspaper, but I imagine public schools. And then went into real estate development. And at first he was a partner in the firm King and James, with the King being Sam King, who later became territorial governor of Hawaii. Then in 1928, he opened his own office and stressed that he was going to primarily be working on development of residential housing and subdivisions. This house was built in 1928, so it's one of the first ones his company will do. He also at that time did a 12-lot subdivision, which I haven't located yet. It's called the James Subdivision. And he lasted, I imagine the Depression took him under, and then this house was sold in 1931 to the Stearnses. So any questions?
Don, can you unshare, please?
Probably.
You're gonna have to at some point.
Okay. Okay, how's that?
Great, thank you. Okay, any questions from the board for Don? Questions or comments?
This is Nancy Peacock. Katie and I also went to this property and circumambulated, as well as went through the interiors of both the houses. And so it gave a lot of information that's not available in the nomination right now. One of the things, Don, you said that the cottage was built in 1939?
That's what the building department has down for the year.
Okay, because, you know, it seemed like it was, seemed like it might have been built at the same time, but I suppose that you know better than I do about the research on that, but it seemed like it had the same detail.
The newspaper article didn't indicate a cottage being built, and the building permit only indicated, that was written in the newspaper, for three houses and three garages. So I'm thinking that maybe the tax office is accurate on this.
Okay, so you think it might have been built in 1939, the cottage?
Perhaps, yes. Maybe. Usually the tax office is off by a year, so it might be 38.
Okay. One of the comments is there's very scanty information about there's no floor plan or anything about the cottage, and there's no site plan that identifies how the cottage sits relative to, I mean, you see photo 1 of 8, you can sort of see the cottage off, a little teensy bit of it off on the left side of photo 1 of 8, pardon me, and then you sort of see this, I guess it's photo 7 of 8, you see one corner of it, but there's not a lot of information about how it, like in a site plan, or there's no floor plan or anything. It seems like that cottage is pretty significant in the overall.
In the written description of the property very well. It says it's off to the side, that there's a sidewalk running up the side of the house, and the cottage is to the other side of the sidewalk. It's a very simple site. It's a rectangular 7,000 square foot property. I don't think you need a site plan, which is not required. Similarly, the cottage, as you know, floor plans are not required as part of a nomination. We've been providing floor plans because people say sometimes it's hard to follow the verbal description. I think the cottage is very straightforward. It's two rooms. I think people can gather from the verbal description about that what the cottage is.
Isn't it three rooms, though? Because isn't it a kitchen, a sort of a great room, and then a bathroom? Isn't it?
There's a little bathroom, yes, right in the corner.
That'd be three rooms?
It's actually built into the living area.
I think I'm really happy that I went to the site because it gave me a lot of insight. But because we're all COVID restricted, I mean, some of the other board members being really descriptive in the written nomination with a photograph seems more even more important than it has been in the past, because people can't go to the site, or it's harder, especially Neighbor Island folks, to glean that information.
We did do a virtual tour yesterday, so everybody got to see the house in more detail yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I was gonna jump in, Nancy, on that too. It was very helpful yesterday. Don kind of took us through the whole property quite, like he said, in great detail.
Okay. Should any more information be added to the nomination, though, because it's obviously that's what's going to be left for the rest of the world to see.
And the house will be there, too.
Hopefully the house will stay. Any other questions or comments, please? Yeah, I thought it was great to see it in person. It was, you know, quite wonderfully intact. It was pretty impressive when you can see all the unblemished Koenig ceilings and some of the walls. It's not often that you get to see that. So it was quite a nice property, I thought. Okay, anybody like to make a motion? I think Paul's working on getting his mute. You're muted, Paul.
There we go. I move that we put the James Investment Property on the State Historic Register, and also recommend to the National, I assume that's happening, under criterion C.
Okay. Any second?
I'll second. Alton.
Alton seconds? Okay. Any other discussion? Take a vote, please, on Paul Morgan's motion to put it on the state and register and recommend it for the national. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Did Nancy vote yes?
Nancy, did you vote, please?
No, because you haven't asked for an abstention yet. I'm going to abstain from that vote because I feel like the nomination's incomplete.
Okay, we have 6 ayes and 1 abstention. Okay, thank you, Don.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next we have the Dillingham Boulevard Kamani Tree Rose, which is, I believe, is Angie.
Okay. This is the Dillingham Boulevard Kamani Tree Rose, or LE. And this is a heart project. I'll leave that for a second. Since this is the first one, you can't read it all. They're all going to say this, so you can do one paragraph at a time. Okay. The Dillingham Boulevard's Kamani Tree Row, or LE, is a double row of 44 extant Kamani trees, Calophyllum enophyllum, that were planted around 1931 along both sides of the street by the Honolulu Shade Tree Commission. The LE is along an approximate 0.6-mile section of Dillingham between North King Street and Kokea Streets.
The City Beautiful Movement,
beginning in the 1890s, was intended to introduce beautification and monumental grandeur to cities by way of architecture and urban planning. It was a reform philosophy that prevailed in the United States and Europe in response to changes brought about by the Industrial Revolution. It was a social reform movement where proponents believed that improving people's surroundings would translate to improvements in overall health and well-being. In Honolulu, at the turn of the 20th century, the city was facing urban growth problems similar to those of its mainland counterparts, and efforts were put into place to beautify the urban environment in public buildings and spaces. This included landscaping efforts believed to improve the urban environment for its occupants. The portion of Dillingham Boulevard from Waikamilo Road to North King Street that contains the trees was constructed in 1930. This area was low-lying and swampy, but by early 1930, the city had laid a solid fill roadbed along the alignment. At its completion, a newspaper article promoted this section of Dillingham Boulevard as one of the finest highways on the island. When planted, there were approximately 100 trees with regular spacing located between Waikamilo Road and North King Street. This included at least 19 trees west of Kokea Street on the opposite side of the Kapalama Canal from the tree rows that are covered in this particular nomination. Of these 19 trees on the other side of the canal, only one remains and therefore isn't included. From its very early history, the outdoor circle identified with the ideals of the City Beautiful Movement, and the outdoor circle organized in 1912 focused on these outdoor improvements. The group became a major impetus for citywide aesthetic and social projects, including the planting of street trees. One of the organization's early accomplishments was a successful advocacy campaign that resulted in the formation of Honolulu's Municipal Shade Tree Commission in 1922. Among the commission's responsibilities was to oversee better care for Honolulu's street trees. In 1930, Honolulu Mayor Wilson appointed William F. Dillingham's wife, Louise, president of the commission. Louise Dillingham, posthumously referred to as the unquestioned leader of Hawaii society, also served as president of the Outdoor Circle. And based on newspaper articles, there was a whole lot of overlap between the Shade Tree Commission and the Outdoor Circle in those early days. By 1930, the Outdoor Circle had established a nursery near Kapi'olani Park, not far from Mrs. Dillingham's La Pietra home, which was the source of the nursery stock for the plantings. The city and county of Honolulu had planned the roadway between downtown Honolulu and Pearl Harbor since at least 1922. During the planning stages, this section of road was called West Queen Street Extension. In early October 1930, the city and county board of supervisors renamed the existing portion of Queen Street Dillingham Boulevard in honor of Benjamin F. Dillingham, Louise's father-in-law. In 1931, the Shade Tree Commission merged with the Recreation Commission and the Parks and Playground Department of Honolulu to form the Parks Board of the City and County of Honolulu. It was around this time, 1931, that the Shade Tree Commission planted the kamae trees along Dillingham Boulevard. In 1933, a newspaper reported that 7 of the kamae trees on Dillingham near King Street had been hacked down in an act of Halloween vandalism. Dillingham Boulevard is a major transportation artery through Kalihi, Kapalama, and Palama neighborhoods. The properties bordering Dillingham are primarily commercial. Additionally, there's the campus of Honolulu Community College that takes up a large portion of the northeast side of the street. Dillingham Boulevard mainly runs straight where the trees are located, with the gentle curves that approaches King Street. Kamae trees grow on both sides of the street in an approximately 6-foot wide planting bed between the basalt lava rock curbs and the concrete sidewalks. In this area of Dillingham, buildings are set back at varying distances from the sidewalk. Trees on the north side of the street are relatively symmetrical, with somewhat wide spreading canopies that cast a broad dappled shade across the boulevard and its sidewalks. However, some of the trees on the southwest side of the street have drastically asymmetrical lopsided canopies, the result of extensive pruning to accommodate overhead wires and cables. I went ahead too fast, sorry. The kamae trees are typically spaced 40 to 75 feet apart, with some wider spacing in areas where the trees are now missing. They have grown to heights of approximately 20 to 30 feet, with trunk diameters ranging from about 2 to 4 feet. In locations where original trees were located but subsequently removed are newer, younger kamae trees, as well as trees of other species. Kamae trees are a member of the mangosteen family, are a tropical tree native to East Africa, India, Southeast Asia, and the Philippines, Taiwan, and the Marianas. They are evergreen with wide canopies and glossy, relatively large leaves. They produce small and fragrant flowers and large round nuts. The name kamae is Hawaiian. I don't know if you can see all the other names over here because I can't see them. Anyway, kamae is Hawaiian. The trees are referred to by many other names throughout the Pacific and the wider world. Hawaii's original Polynesian settlers lightly brought these trees to Hawaii. The trees typically grow 25 to 60 feet tall when fully mature, and they are a hardy tree with a shallow root system and can thrive in many conditions and tolerate periods of both drought and flooding. Native Hawaiians commonly use the kamae wood to make food vessels, and the tree's wood and nuts have other uses in carving and cabinet making, as well as lamp oil and cosmetics, both in Hawaii and in other parts of the world. The Ali area's soil is coral-based, so planting the kamae trees made sense in this area. Their shallow root system allowed them to thrive in rocky and sandy soil conditions. The trees also tolerate poor air quality, which may help this area that is intermittently congested with automobile traffic. Because of the kamae tree's shallow root system, the large trunks of the 44 mature trees often have roots at the soil line, which have occasionally fractured the sidewalks. Near North King Street, there's no planting strip, and the trees here are set in circular or rectangular openings in the concrete sidewalk which surrounds the trunk. The edges of these openings typically have fractured over time. Of the original approximately 100 trees, 44 remain along this half-mile corridor of Dillingham Boulevard, still fulfilling their original intent of providing beauty and shade along the road. The Dillingham Boulevard Kamani tree rose, LE, planted in the 30s, is significant at the local level under Criterion A as an important feature of the city beautification planning efforts implemented at Honolulu's roadways, highways, parks, school grounds, and municipal buildings. The LE represents the street tree planting and beautification that was taking place in the city at that time as inspired by the City Beautiful movement. The period of significance is 1931, the approximate year the trees were planted. Between 1931 and 1949, Dillingham Boulevard was the main transportation route between downtown Honolulu and Pearl Harbor and points west, but was supplanted in 1949 by Nimitz Highway. Integrity is minimally retained for these trees. The original feeling of a tree-lined boulevard providing a shady passage for automobiles and pedestrians is partly intact. The tree rows do much to soften the industrial landscape and retain the sense of human scale. The trees today provide the same function as when they were installed by providing shade and landscaping along Dillingham Boulevard. While the breadth, height, and span of the trees continue to provide shade along this section of Dillingham, affecting integrity is the fact that several of the trees have been removed and many of the remaining canopies have been impacted, resulting from severe pruning. And that is it.
Thank you, Angie. Can you unshare?
Oh, yes. Stop share.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the board, please?
Katie, if I could, I just want to compliment Angie for this nomination and for putting it together. I just think it's great to get something other than a private house. And it's so interesting. And I remember reading about it when I was doing a little research on the Capitol building, realizing that Robinson had kind of laid out the grounds of the old palace in order to kind of bring in the City Beautiful movement. Like he'd worked before in Texas and a number of other places, and is in many ways too bad we didn't get more of it.
I have a question too. Angie, is there any effort on the county's part to replace the lost trees?
Am I unmuted because I seem to have lost my Zoom screen?
We can hear you.
Okay. They have in the past had a program of replacing trees as they were, you know, either die or impacted somehow. In the past, that hasn't necessarily been 100% with Kamani trees. So that's really the best I can answer that. They have replaced them with Kamani trees, but they've also replaced them with non-Kamani trees.
Okay, any other questions for Angie?
I got a question. This is Nancy Peacock weighing in. Do you think that the Kamani trees are endangered by the rail? I mean, are they planning on keeping them or tearing them, cutting them down or what?
I wish I knew.
What? Okay.
I think they will be impacted because the rail is, to my mind, the rail is going to put at least some of them in shade most of the time. And so I think that will have an impact on them.
Okay.
This nomination was required as mitigation for the rail. So, you know, they are required to do what they can to save them, I believe. But I do think they will be impacted by the rail, definitely.
Thank you.
Katie, I had one quick question. And this is probably to Angie, really. I see that the period of significance is 1931. Is that what they recommend for a landscape feature? Just curious. I don't know one way or the other. Or do they does it have significance past the time of the planting?
We just chose 1931 because it was a date. I mean, the trees are still there, you know, so technically their significance as beautification and shade is ongoing to this.
Right. I just wondered if you looked at the landscape.
I didn't see anything specifically that talked about something like this as far as the period of significance. So, you know, we just went with that because that's something.
Because they have issued all sorts of stuff, and usually it's, you have
right. And obviously some of the newer planted trees weren't around in 1931, yeah. But as a landscape feature, you know, that's when it was planted, and that's when
And that's what the Park Service recommends, picking the time when it was planted, or do they have any other nuanced suggestion?
We didn't find any suggestions on this. When it goes to the National Register, which it needs to, you know, based on the mitigation, if they have other feelings about it, we could definitely amend that based on their suggestions.
Just to note that we got a message here from Stanley that says, I can respond. The Kamani trees are to be removed. This nomination has been prepared because it is required by the HARD PA.
Oh, all of them?
Yeah. That's what it appears
that I had heard too.
Oops, doesn't matter when the date is then.
Why don't we ask Stanley to explain?
Okay, Stanley, can you add anything to that?
Yes. First of all, the nomination is required by the PA, and that's why it's been prepared. When the initial plan for the guideway going down Dillingham was prepared, it was only going to result in the removal of one side. And it now looks like, because of utilities and everything involved along Dillingham, which is a really packed corridor, that both sides of the tree allee will have to be removed. Because of the cultural significance of Kamani trees, however, the wood is to be repurposed, and then the landscape will be duplicated, but to what degree yet, the plans have yet to be finalized, so I can't report any further than that.
I have a question as a member of the board. Do you intend to relocate these trees? These are very historic trees that we've heard about. Do you plan to do that?
That is not my understanding. My understanding is that the trees are going to be repurposed, and their wood is supposed to be dispersed to Native Hawaiian organizations.
Stanley, is that really a recognized mitigation to repurpose something like that? I've never heard that before. Is that something new?
It may be, but I was not involved in the negotiations for the repurposing. That was a landscape architect who was involved at the time, Masutomo Murata.
I was going to say that the root structure is not very deep. It's on soil fill land. There's plenty of places at Honolulu Community College where the trees could be lifted up and replanted. I don't think that's a difficult at all.
I have a question, Stanley. has this change from the PA, from the time of the PA, been, it's a consultant, sorry, I can't even talk. The consultation has already been done on this change? That's what I'm trying to ask.
I believe it has been.
Okay. So it's kind of a done deal then?
Yes. I mean, we had several assessments done by landscape architects and biologists about the actual conditions of the trees, and all of that went into this whole proposal for repurposing.
I have a question. Then why are you here before us to preserve these trees if they're going to be taken out?
We have submitted the nomination to SHPD as required by the PA. And actually, probably the director should respond to that question, because that was a question that we had as well.
Okay, so for starters, the programmatic agreement covering the HART Rail project requires the preparation of this nomination as a mitigation measure. Okay, and the way the PA is written, it is very clear that they have to present, they don't have, just have to prepare the nomination, they have to present it to the review board. What happens after the review board acts, of course, is dependent on what the review board decides to do with it. But they do have an obligation under the PA to present it to the board.
What is the city engaged with all this? Isn't it their responsibility to preserve the historical context of what was presented to us today?
So the review under Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act is basically the result of that was that the rail project would have an adverse effect on historic properties, and that, you know, the HART had to come up with mitigation measures. As you know, I was not involved in the preparation of the programmatic agreement, so I don't know all of the details of that negotiation. But one of the mitigation measures, which is, you know, understanding that the historic properties are going to be damaged or destroyed, one of the mitigation measures for some of those properties was preparation of the National Register nomination. I will say that I don't quite understand the idea of preparing a nomination as a mitigation measure, you know, preparing a nomination for something that will be destroyed, but that's what was agreed to in the programmatic agreement.
Yeah, you think it would be HABS documentation, or especially for something that's planned to be demolished. You think that might have chosen something like HABS documentation rather than nomination form, but sorry, well, go ahead.
I was around at CHPTE when this PA was being worked on, and it was never the intention at that point. Very, 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 very early in this process, before they had begun any kind of construction or any real, you know, serious construction drawings, that these Kamani trees would go away. So when the PA was written, nobody thought that they were going to all be torn down or chopped down, I guess, technically. So I think that's, you know, and they've had a change. They've reconsulted, and all the consulting parties were, so, you know, participated in this, and they came to a different kind of agreement is my understanding from what Stanley has said. So what happens from this point forward has pretty much been decided by the consulting parties to the PA, and that's what they agreed to. So that's what will be followed. Is that right, Stanley?
Yes, but I believe HAL's documentation was also performed for this as well. Was it not?
I don't know.
I'll have to verify that.
Yeah. I must say that the idea of repurposing as a mitigation disturbs me generally. You see this in all the house and garden magazines or TV shows where they tear down a perfectly nice bungalow, and then they say they're repurposing it, the materials. And as you know, anyone who's in the preservation field does not see repurposing as a mitigation. Then that just opens the door to, oh, we don't, that house, okay, the mitigation will save the windows. It just, anyway, that's just an opinion.
It's nice as a sustainability effort, but not as a preservation effort.
Yeah, I might add, having been a member of the Landscape Advisory Committee at UH for a long time, there were trees routinely lifted up and moved all along where the music building is, and also where the legacy pathway is. They lifted them up and they moved them physically. I don't understand what the degree of difficulty is for not finding brand new homes for the Kamani trees.
So that might be, go ahead, sorry.
It seems that these people have just forgotten what the Kamani tree is all about. Why did the ancestors go through such an effort when these people right here just have this, what mediation, what the purpose.
So maybe that needs to be a separate effort to try to change, you know, what happens with that part of the mitigation. That they're moved instead of repurposed. Anyway, okay, any more questions or comments? Bill Chapman, are you laughing at me?
Just the kind of laughing at repurposed. It's just such a, it's just such a sort of a, what would you call it, a feint or a way of like justifying anything, right? We'll repurpose the concrete. We'll repurpose this. I don't think people should get off quite so easy, I guess.
Okay. Any more questions or comments? Questions for Angie or Stanley?
This is Alton. It just seems like it's kind of a waste of time that we're being asked to consider a nomination for something they're already planning to tear down. What is the purpose of having a nomination for something that's going to be destroyed? I really don't understand that.
Well, when the PA was written, the trees were not slated for destruction. So a nomination was required by the PA to be presented towards the board to put this Ali on the register. But since then, and it's been quite a number of years, things have changed. They've got, you know, apparently issues with of conflict between the trees and the rail. And so the trees have to go now.
I have a quick comment, Bill, that I think that, and Alan, please jump in on this, but my understanding is that in order to trigger other sorts of things like mitigation or recording under a HALS program or something like that, you have to have at least, it either has to be listed or it has to be a formal determination of eligibility. I'm not quite sure why you didn't go the route of determination of eligibility instead of a nomination. That's not for you, Angie, that's really for what the state expected.
There was a determination of eligibility along the entire route of the rail, and there were a certain number of structures and sites and bridges, because I've been presenting bridges too, right, that were determined eligible. And the mitigation for impacting these eligible resources in, you know, as part of the mitigation were these nominations.
Because oftentimes the determination of eligibility, in fact, looks exactly like a nomination.
True.
Sorry, Bill Salsa, did you have another? I think he was trying to say something. Maybe not. Okay.
I asked the thing. So is there a way to find out what other problems coming down the rail route, you know, so we don't get bushwhacked by things that are going to be destroyed? I don't know. Just seems like it was kind of a surprise. I don't know what they're planning to demolish down the line. You know. Anyway, I just wonder if there's a way to find out. So, that's all.
I have a note here from Stanley. He'd like to make another comment. Go ahead, Stanley.
We can probably the best thing to do when we have another case like this is to notify those members who are reviewing the document that, you know, this will remain, or this is to be demolished, or this is to be altered. And that probably should be done on the first slide. In the case of the PA, there's been duplicate documentation as mitigation, and that is just not National Register nominations. There's been HABS, HARE, and HAL documentation also prepared for all of these properties.
So Stanley, is that for all of the properties that were determined eligible?
Yes.
So each one of them has either HABS, HARE, or HAL documentation?
Yeah, oftentimes there are duplicates, so they're gonna get both sets of documentation and then our nomination as well as HABS, HARE, or HAL's mitigation documents. I wasn't here to negotiate the PA either, so.
There's a list as an appendix to the PA of, I can't remember whether it's 31 or 33 properties that
33
they have.
Total.
It's 33? Okay, of 33 properties that are in this group that get this documentation because of impacts by the rail.
I think it would be, if I can jump in, I think it would be very helpful, Stanley and Angie or anybody else putting these forward. It'd be really helpful to know at the beginning, because then we wouldn't have to argue smaller issues and things, like if they're going to be taken down anyway, we wouldn't have to spend a lot more time looking at them.
And my apologies.
I would really wonder, though, what would happen if we determined that it wasn't eligible? Would they not do the mitigation at that point?
No, the mitigations have been done.
So, except for the donating them. Repurposing the wood hasn't been done yet, right?
Correct.
The PA does not say that any of these have to be put on the register. That's not part of the wording in there. They just have, the documentation has to be done, the nominations have to be done, and they have to be submitted to SHPTE, and they have to be presented in front of the board. The decision that you guys make is your decision, and then the mitigation is complete.
Thank you, Angie. I see that.
I'm just trying to get this straight in my mind, but it seems to me that whatever we vote, we're not changing any outcomes. So it's been presented to us, but do we need to make a decision if it's not going to make any difference?
Well, I think we still have to respond to the nomination. We have to agree whether or not to put it on the register. Is that correct, Dr. Downer?
Well, you have to act on it. You know what I mean? I think the simple thing is to vote yes or no. I would have to reread the agreement document to see whether or not simply deferring it would satisfy the terms of it. You know, this is, I've been at this a long time, and I'm not a fan of National Register of Nominations as a means of mitigation, but there are people who just think it's a wonderful idea, and apparently that was the case here. But I do think it the cleanest way for me would be to take action. You know, and as Angie says, you know, the PA cannot constrain the board in its decision making, but the PA does require that it be presented. You know, and the board can decide to do what it decides to do.
Okay. Any other questions from the board?
I have a question. I think we should just be on record and take the vote.
I'm sorry.
I think we have to just do our. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, so anybody like to make a motion?
I'll move that the Kamani trees on Dillingham Boulevard be listed in the Hawaii State Register of Historic Places under criterion A. Is that it, the only one, Angie?
Yes.
I'm trying to say yes.
And that it that the nomination that, and that we recommend that the property be listed in the National Register of Historic Places.
I'll second that.
Good. I second his motion.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion? Okay. Let's take a vote on Bill Chapman's motion, please. All in favor of placing these on the state register with recommending to the national register, say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
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 So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Nancy, you want to weigh in? Nancy, there you are.
Yeah, sorry, I had to get unmuted. I'm going to vote to abstain because I feel like I'm confused. So I'm just one of abstain.
Okay, we have 6 in favor and 1 abstaining.
Thanks.
Right, thank you. All right, thank you, Angie. Okay, moving on to our next year. Let me ask, does anybody like a 5-minute break? Or you want to move ahead with one more? Oh, Bill Chapman. Okay, 5-minute break. Back at 11:28.
Thanks, Katie.
Laura, you got a tail.
Yes. It's one of my two rescue kitties.
That looks so funny. You're just sitting there, this black tail goes up.
Yeah. It's they like to take part in the discussions and the keyboard.
Of course they do. I'm surprised my dog hasn't been over here to visit yet.
It's a lovely kitty.
So if Bill Chapman and Nancy and Alton can let me know if you guys are back yet. I see Bill Sosa.
I'm back. Nancy's back.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy.
Back.
Thank you, Alton. I think Bill Chapman maybe has to go the furthest.
I'm back.
Thank you, Bill. Chapman, are you back yet? Give him a couple minutes.
Sorry, everyone. Back.
Sorry, I was on mute. Sorry, we can get started again. Aloha Towers, Angie.
Knowledge, this one is not going to be torn down. Okay. The Aloha Tower was built as part of the terminal complex at Piers 8, 9, and 10 on Honolulu Harbor when the harbor was being expanded to accommodate Hawaii's growing shipping and sea travel markets. An early example of Art Deco architecture in Hawaii, the Aloha Tower was one of the first buildings visible from arriving ships and was the point at which passengers disembarked after days at sea, to be met by hula dancers, mumu-clad women selling leis, and music by the Royal Hawaiian Band. Aloha.
That does not seem like the right slide to me. Hold on one second. I guess it is though. Aloha Tower is located at the end, at the Mackay end of Pier 9 in Honolulu Harbor, southwest of downtown Honolulu at the original turn of 6th Street. The area was historically urban, commercial, industrial, and transportation oriented. It retains those characteristics today with greater urban density and increased downtown development. That seems like the right slide. There we go. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble. It's not responding. These two slides in the wrong order. That's what my problem was. And also, things are not working. There we go. The tower is bound on the east northeast by Nimitz Highway and on all other sides by the water. The Peninsular Wharf is roughly in line with the grid of downtown, and its northern boundary lines up with Bethel Street and southern boundary with Bishop Street. A portion of Fort Street, which originally crossed downtown and terminated the entrance to Aloha Tower, was converted to a pedestrian mall in 1968. The land on which Aloha Tower now stands was created during the first Honolulu Harbor development project that was completed in 1870. What had been mostly mudflats and beach was converted into fill land where government offices, heavy industry, and shipping-related businesses set up shop. Plans to modernize Honolulu Harbor came about as the City Beautiful movement was gaining popularity in the United States and Europe around the turn of the 20th century. Hawaii was becoming a tourist destination, and many people wanted to showcase the city of Honolulu as a beautiful vacation spot rather than an industrial stopover for whaling ships. And an ideal, the territorial government began a major dredging and wharf construction project to adapt Honolulu Harbor to larger industrial and passenger-based ships. As the harbor developed, it was decided the wharf for piers 8, 9, 10, and 11 was best suited for large passenger ships and the ideal gateway to the city. The foot of Fort Street above the terminal complex at piers 8, 9, and 10 was first made public in 1919 as part of a larger harbor modernization project. There's Aloha Tower. After years of debate concerning the style and height of the tower, the Board of Commissioners began construction in 1925, and it was completed in 1926. Originally slated to be 172 feet tall, designs for the tower were changed in construction to add an additional story, making the tower 184 feet tall with a 40-foot tall flagpole and 4-foot time ball on top. The tower was to serve as a lookout for the harbor master and harbor pilots, with offices below for the Board of Harbor Commissioners activities. Unused office space was available for rent to local businesses, and the 10th floor observation deck was free and open to visitors. The arrival of passenger ships was always met with boat day celebrations. Originally an irregular event focused on the arrival of mail and goods from the outside world, boat day tradition was kept alive in the territorial era by Matson Navigation Company. Though boat day was designated for the enjoyment of visitors, local people also took part in the festivities. Matson's boats transported mail, perishables, and essential supplies. As the great ships were emptied, tourists and supplies were shuttled across the island by car, bicycle, streetcar, and train. Only during World War II was Aloha Tower closed to the public. After the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941, Aloha Tower was commissioned by the U.S. military for use as a planning center for military convoy operations. During this time, the tower and all of its windows and all four faces of the clock were painted in camouflage. Much of the vegetation from nearby Irwin Park was removed, and the whole area was fenced and patrolled by guards. A law tower was returned to its pre-war condition and released from military service in December of 1945, at which time it resumed its role as Hawaii's premier welcoming landmark. Aloha Tower served Honolulu Harbor not only as the Harbor Master's Office and official traffic control for the port, but also as a transportation hub and signal of welcome to visitors. The bright white Aloha Tower was the tallest building on the Hawaiian Islands for many years and one of the most distinguishable man-made features of the Honolulu skyline. After 5 days at sea, passengers disembarked from the ships at the terminal complex at the piers, with Aloha Tower above them. From its construction in 1926 until the marked decline of passenger ship travel in the late 1950s, the Aloha Tower was the first place many visitors to Hawaii set foot. Today, Aloha Tower is accessed by Aloha Tower Drive, which follows the original Fort Street corridor southwest from Nimitz Highway towards the tower. The tower is set back from the street and a wide palm-lined brick promenade runs from the northeast facade to the Aloha Tower Drive. The promenade wraps completely around Aloha Tower, creating a circular boundary that separates the tower from adjacent buildings. Aloha Tower's Art Deco in style with elements of late Gothic Revival architecture. It's square in plan and constructed of reinforced concrete covered in stucco. The tower has a prominent three-story base with four large arched entryways arranged in a cruciform plan. Each facade is divided into three bays with the large round arched entryway framed by two pilasters at the center. The ground level entrance has no doors and above is a fixed glass transom with decorative metal apertures topped by a recessed stucco panel with the word Aloha in metal letters. The base of the tower, the base elevations of Aloha Tower are nearly identical. The outer two bays are simpler, featuring only a single vertical-oriented recessed fixed glass window with decorative metal armature and a triangular arched window hood. The northwest, southwest, and southeast base facades were created after removing part of Pier 10 terminal and demolishing the Pier 9 terminal, both of which originally abutted the base of the Aloha Tower on those three sides. The shaft of the tower is narrower than the base and emphasizes the building's verticality. The four identical elevations each have an upright tripartite band of windows that stretch from the third to the ninth floor. The windows are vertically oriented with double awning lights set over the larger fixed light. Above each window are two stacked square decorated metal panels. Original drawings show the windows on Aloha Tower were steel sash and glass with decorative armature. The armature was removed and the original windows replaced in 1957. The clock face is 12.5 feet in diameter. The window band and clock face are framed by pilasters that draw the eye up to the 10th floor observation deck, which is defined by a belt course that wraps around and supported by corbels. The balustrade and a small cutaway with balustrade has small cutaway block letters that spell Aloha and is topped with metal safety rails. The four corners of the Aloha Tower terminate in stylized spires reminiscent of those at the base. Each spire has an arch slot window treatment that terminates in dome-like roofs. And at the center, the tower's main roof is an eight-sided convex curved hipped roof of green cement plaster. Each main elevation of the roof has a tall slot window with a triangular window hood that creates a gable. And the roof, that domed roof is capped with the small metal widow's walk and a yardarm with rigging and flags. The only floors of the Aloha Tower open to the public are the open air ground floor, the second floor, and the 10th floor observation deck. Other floors are used as offices for both Harvard Division and private businesses. The second floor, accessed by stairs or the elevator, is not an actively used space, which was likely a transition space when the tower adjoined the pier buildings. It is predominantly open, and the center of the room features a round balcony that looks down to the ground floor. The walls and ceiling of the second floor show a complex and asymmetrical support system of engaged piers and beams. This is a view of the original elevator and its floor indicator. The 10th floor is only accessible to the public via the elevator due to the location of the clock mechanism between the 9th and 10th floors. The 10th floor observation deck was originally used as an overlook for harbor pilots and was also open to the public. There are still harbor offices in the space in use on the 10th floor. This floor was remodeled in 1957 also. Aloha Tower is of state significance under criterias A and C. Under A, it's for its association with the Hawaiian maritime history and as a transportation hub for tourist activities in Hawaii from its construction in 1926 until the dominance of commercial air travel in 1959. The tower was built as part of a terminal complex at Piers 8, 9, and 10 on Honolulu Harbor when the harbor was being expanded. Under criteria C, it is for its unique place in Hawaii's architectural history. The Aloha Tower was the tallest building in the islands when it was constructed and remained so for 20 years. Inspired by the ferry building in San Francisco, the Aloha Tower is a classic example of early 20th century maritime architecture. As far as integrity, the demolition of the pier terminals surrounding Aloha Tower and alterations to the base impact the building's integrity, but the intact nature of the tower above and the second floor conveys the original design and use. The Aloha Tower was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1976. This nomination is intended as an update to the original nomination form. And that's it.
I had a question, please. I was going to ask you, so this is just an update. It's already on the register. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, good. Yes. And I had one other question. The tower, was the tower originally to stand alone, or was it supposed to be? All of my childhood, they had all this ugliness around the base, and I'm just kind of curious, was that the concept at its very beginning?
The ugliness? Probably not the ugliness, but yes, it was part of Piers 8 and 9, I believe it was. Or no, maybe 8 wasn't. Anyway, it was connected to the piers at the time. And when they demolished those piers, that's when they recreated the base on the sides that were originally interior. And that, I can't remember. I just said what date that happened and now I don't remember.
That's right. No, I got it. Thank you very much. I didn't read all of its elements, but I recall I like the way it is now, but it doesn't seem to, that place is economically depressed, but I like the way it looks now. And to me, that's what the Aloha Tower is about. When I grew up, I just saw the base. Thank you very much.
So Angie, this form was just to add additional information?
Yes. Because back in the 70s, the nomination forms were sometimes like one page long. So this was just to add more history, more context, and more architectural description.
Great. Is this part of the heart?
Yes, all of these are part of the heart, every single one of them that I'm giving you today. Do you need me to linger longer on that first page disclaimer so everybody can read it for the next one? Everybody's like, no, I don't want to read it. Okay.
Katie, could I ask a quick question here? First of all, Angie, I thought it was a great nomination. It's really interesting and really well researched, and I learned a lot. So thank you. The update is good. I once did a nomination for the tower, for the lighthouse in Molokai, and the architectural description was something like a 120-foot tower. That was the whole
nomination. Exactly.
But I have a question just out of curiosity. When you were looking at the history of the building of it and everything, how much of that is fill land? If you don't know, don't try to make it up, please. But I mean, I once read that the Ka'a Heiau was in the proximate location of the Aloha Tower. And then other things contradict that and suggest that that's all fill. Yeah. I'm just curious how far out the harbor edge went.
Well, that those maps that I had pretty much show that it was kind of bog land. I think it was pretty shallow there, but it was all fill out to that point.
Okay. Yeah. I'm wondering if there could have been a structure there.
Yeah.
The other things say Pekaa was sort of like exactly where the fort was, but other things say no, it was further out. And I don't know whether there was an islet or something where they could have had it. So I've just always been curious.
I guess that's possible, but based on those older maps that I showed earlier, I think it's all filled.
Oh, and I wanted to throw in something from last time. By the way, it's an allee of trees.
Allee?
Not an allee of trees. just so
I never claimed that.
Just so you don't want to say it wrong in some other context. Sort of like immigré as opposed to immigree, right?
So. Yes, well, my French doesn't exist, so.
That was just a friendly offering.
No problem. I appreciate it. And I actually had the phonetical pronunciation there, and I apparently ignored it.
So this is Nancy Peacock. I wanted to just weigh in on this map of the 1825 map that's in the nomination. You know, it'd be really nice to know, like, where Aloha Tower ended up being relative to that map. Because you can see, if you look at the map, the Malden 1825 map, you know, you can see what was there. And then you could probably begin to understand what was fill just from that map.
Yeah, I think so.
And also from the other map, the 1887 map, also you would be able to sort of project out and figure out what was fill, because you have reference to buildings that are probably still there, you know, in Chinatown. And so it gave us even Kamakapili Church. So, you know, you could begin to do overlays from those two maps alone and begin to understand what fill was.
Yes.
I'm not saying anybody's going to do that necessarily, but also if you look at the 1906, the Dakin fire insurance map, I'm not quite sure, you know, that too begins to explain like what was fill and what was there and how all this progression went. You know, that's why these maps are so incredibly valuable.
Yeah, by that point they've done quite a bit of fill, I think.
Yeah.
No, you're right, Nancy. I mean, when you look at the 1825 Malden map there, you can see there is some bit of land projecting beyond the fort.
Yeah. Anyway, it's so interesting because you don't see that. It's sort of hard to figure out, like, if you were to overlay that, you could begin to understand what was going on, you know, later. I'm saying the same thing over and over again, but
I think that little complex just to the left of the fort in that map is probably the King's Palace area. That's where it would have been. So
in the 1825, is that the
1825? Yeah, the 1825 map. So you see there's a little cluster compound there.
That well, it says fish that ponds. Be, oh, that, I see. Yep. Yeah, there's that fish would be ponds. The King's
Palace,
and then you get up to the...
I'm right near Honoruru.
Yeah. Could that be the Russian fort? Yeah, the fort.
Russian fort is that irregular shape.
Yeah.
It looks like it has a number in it, sort of. But that's the Russian fort.
Yeah, there's a little church in there and a little pond. And
just off to the left, there's a compound, and that would be the King's Palace area.
Okay.
And I'm not sure, the Pekaa'ahea may have been taken down to build the fort even to get the stone.
Could be. All right. Pardon me.
Okay. Salsa, did you trying to say something?
I'm going to say that... it's Honolulu, not Honolulu. That's one of my pet peeves. I just thought I'd say.
I said Honoruru. As soon as it says on the map, Honoruru.
Oh, no, not yours. I didn't know.
Okay, other questions or comments for Angie? Okay, would somebody like to make a motion? Actually, now that's a question here. What do you make a motion since it's already on the register? What kind of motion Maybe Alan, you can help us with that. What kind of motion can we make?
Good question. I would say the motion should recommend accepting this update of the existing nomination and forward it to the National Register.
Thank you.
As Alan said, I'd like to update the nomination with inclusion information that was presented today for the Aloha Tower.
Okay. Anybody like to second that?
I will. Alton.
Alton seconds. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. We can take a vote. All in favor of accepting this updated nomination for the Aloha Tower for the State Register and forwarding on to the National Register, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, we have 7 yeses and I would presume 0 noes. We ran out of people. All right, thank you, Nancy. I was gonna propose, since it's almost 12, that we take a lunch break, unless anybody would prefer that we forge ahead with one more.
Let's take a lunch break.
Many more nominations do we have?
We have 6 more. We've completed 6 and we have 6 more.
Okay. Thank you.
Lunch break. Okay, so I was gonna propose 30 minutes. Does anybody on the board or from SHPD feel like you would like more than 30 minutes?
30 minutes. I'm good. Nancy. Go ahead, Alan.
Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
On behalf of the staff, 30 minutes is plenty.
Okay. All right. Nancy?
I'm fine. 30 minutes is fine.
Okay. Okay. So we'll be back at 12:30.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jane, you can stop the recording now and pick it back up.